Good morning. My name is Natalie Gochner, and I am representing the political center here on both sides of the aisle. On the political right, we have in the studio with us Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie.
And on the political left, sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacus, Representative Brian King.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Glad to have you, Brian. And, you know, I guess that Jim DeBacus, doesn't get the council votes to serve on the UTA board, and he decided to go on vacation or something.
Oh, he's sulking. The guy's just sulking.
Are we starting with that?
Why not?
Well, I don't know. Jim's not in the studio today.
Which makes it perfect.
Let's pick on him. But I know what he'd say on this, so we won't talk about him anymore. But I think it's really important that we talk about Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke and his new recommendation about bear's ears. I got to credit, the Herbert administration, our congressional delegation, for getting someone of Zinke's stature to weigh in and help redefine this issue, Brian.
Yeah.
We had a monument declared by Fiat with Obama. Many people in our state like it, but many people do not. Our congressional delegation weighs in, and Trump says, let's relook at it. And Zinke's now saying it should be smaller, and we can do some other things to protect these lands.
Well, you say by fiat, but this is something that's been looked at literally for years, and that the Obama administration has looked at for years. And they came out, and they gathered a lot of information. I met with Sally Jewell down at Bluff when she had her hearing in the summer in July of last year. And it's a far cry from what Bill Clinton did with Grand Staircase Escalante. That was bad process. And I've said that on the floor of the House before, that that's an illustration of terrible process, what President Clinton did. But I think the Obama administration gathered a lot of information. And I personally met with Secretary Zinke when he was here last month, when he was visiting the area. And I was impressed, quite honestly, with his commitment to, at least from what he was saying, gather information and do the right thing in terms of evaluating that information. And look, it doesn't bother me too much that he makes this recommendation. I think that the Obama decision was right, but there's room for people, if they want to scale it back somewhat, to do that. Mm-hmm. I just hope that the administration doesn't do what they end up doing on ideological grounds. That if they scale it back, they scale it back in a way that is defensible and justifiable. And, in terms of the co-management with the Native Americans, that was an integral part of what the Obama administration had in place. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
That's
so picking
nothing
up on
new.
That. Dan, I want to hear your comments, but I'm also impressed that the House Minority Leader went to Bluff, Utah, on this issue.
That's a
long ways away,
friend. It is, and it was a beautiful – I had a great time. We sat in a cultural hall, my wife and I, on a – Saturday afternoon in Bluff, the temperature outside was 106 degrees and there was no air conditioning, and we sat for 3.5 hours and listened to the comment. It was really a great experience.
Interesting.
Actually.
Dan, what are your current take on bear's ears and what Zinke's done and where the Trump administration's headed?
The idea that the federal government has to come in and declare a monument for things that we've been protecting since statehood and have been in great shape since statehood and have been protected, the fact that we even need them to have the monument is ridiculous. That being said, the fact that it's going to go from very ridiculous to only slightly ridiculous, I guess, is better than nothing.
Boy, he's a right-wing nut, isn't he, Natalie? How do you stand him?
I'll say from the political center, see, I don't see it quite like that, right? I see the public lands as a national treasure, and I see that. But you also need to pay attention to the communities closest to those lands, and that there's plenty of room for common ground. I don't point a really big middle finger at the federal government like I think Dan might.
Wow.
I don't, but do you? But you kind of do, yeah.
Actually, which way is D.C.?
Maybe we should transition to the Comey testimony or the Jeff Sessions testimony, but I don't know if it gets any better.
Let's go to the Comey testimony.
Brian, you weren't on the show last week, but the Comey testimony, do you want to make any commentary on that? I mean, it's pretty interesting what's going on between the Trump administration and Comey, and
Do
you believe?
It's just been fascinating. I thought Comey, I didn't see either one of the whole things, but I've seen little excerpts from each one of them. Comey, from what I saw, came across as very thoughtful, as very credible, as sort of his reputation, of course, is as this upright defender of FBI values, and I was impressed. Sessions, from what I saw, came across as a lot more tentative, a lot more evasive. Mm-hmm. I mean, this nonsense about I can't answer because of some unwritten unidentifiable Department of Justice policy that says that I can't answer. I thought that was very damaging to his credibility. But, you know, hey, look, it is what it is. And Dan and I were, the three of us were talking before, when you have a sort of he said, she said thing, it's hard to get very far in terms of evaluating credibility. You have to look at other information that doesn't come just out of the mouths of the witnesses.
Dan, we're a week out from the Comey testimony, and then, of course, we've had the Jeff Sessions testimony. Anything you want to add from the right?
No. I think I finally empathize with the Benghazi investigation, just like a little bit, not a lot, because I do think Benghazi went on longer than this, but that's a whole other issue. We have problems in Russia. We have Obamacare to work on. We have, you go down the list of things that need to be done by Congress and should be getting press, appraisal and people paying attention to it. Nobody is. Everybody's off on some side drama that's almost like some middle school relationship between, you know, a couple of 15-year-olds, and they're complaining over in the side corner. Everybody wants to focus on that, and nobody wants to focus on the fact that there are real issues that need to be gotten to. And if we don't get to them soon, and maybe that's the key to the Democratic agenda right now.
I think it's the key to the Republican agenda. Is they use this as a distraction to keep people from focusing on the fact that healthcare reform is being done behind closed doors, Dan.
Oh.
Nobody knows what's going on with the senators.
That's never been done before.
By a bunch of men.
It hasn't.
It's never,
you're right. Don't tell me that
the Pelosi stuff was never done in open, you're right. That
was,
you're right.
The ACA was done with open hearings. I mean, there was not, there's not a comparison, Dan. You can say it's the same.
Okay, you guys, sometimes.
Plane's going down, Emily.
I meet people sometimes that they'll say, oh, I like the show, Both Sides of the Aisle. You know, how do you deal with those people on the right and the left? And this is just a really good example.
I'm strangling my microphone. And nobody can see this, but I've done two demonstrative activities, and this is another one, in this deal.
That's my next.
Guys, let's just agree
today.
That we're not going to, you know, agree on the Sessions issues and the Benghazi issues. But
can we just get down to real policy? I want the country to focus on real issues. Let's go there. Let's have those debates and let's get it going.
Yeah. So when I worked in Washington, I was at Health and Human Services in the first year of Bush's second term, and we knew, and I'm on the, you know, executive team there, and we knew that we had 1 year to get work done. Mm-hmm. Because we got 1 year to get work done, and then
election year.
Well, it's elections, and it's also congressional hearings and testimony, because they start going after you in terms of investigations. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it's sad to have our federal government as paralyzed as it is.
Well, and I think that Trump's own character and personality, plus his inexperience, have come to bear to have him squander a period of time when everybody looks at the first 100 days or so, at least the first 6 months of a new president's tenure, and says, this is your opportunity to get things done. This is your opportunity to have a bit of a honeymoon. Nothing like that has existed for Donald Trump.
Yeah. Nothing.
Okay, I got to ask you guys predictions. We only have another minute or so left in this segment, but the Golden State Warriors win the NBA championship.
Oh, no.
Quick prediction.
Sports on this show?
I know, but I'm going to go politics here, Dan. Quick prediction. Does the whole team go to the White House, or do some stay back because of the resist, you know?
The whole team.
Some will stay back.
I think
they're both agreeing, disagreeing again.
I think that the Golden State Warriors are a class act.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, and I have learned this from my friend Natalie in the middle, that it doesn't matter who the president is, it doesn't matter the party that's ruling, it doesn't matter any of those things. Respecting the office, being part of tradition, all those things really matter in this country. And I don't think the Golden State Warriors are the kind that just throw that aside either.
I think most of them will show up, and I think some of them will not.
No,
interesting that Tom Brady did not show up for the Patriots.
Okay, and Brian, do you have a prediction of which player might not?
No.
Yeah. Hey, in our next segment, we've got a little bit more D.C. politics to talk about, and then we'll talk about local issues. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
This is Dan McKay on the right.
And this is Brian King on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I want to talk about the tragic shooting this week in Alexandria, Virginia, involving a Republican baseball practice.
Yeah.
And in the morning, a guy from the Midwest in his 60s, he was actually a volunteer on the Bernie Sanders campaign, But he's clearly a Republican hater, I think is fair to say. And he starts shooting at these both staffers and House representatives. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, apparently he'd been hanging around there for a few days. And so I think he had sort of cased out the place and knew that they were coming. And or at least, we're gathering information. But I think it's just pitiful. And one of the things that, you know, Dan and I argue about this, and, you know, we've had point times on the floor when we sort of wagged our fingers, if not more, in each other's faces.
Wait, when we've wagged fingers at each other? Or when one of us has wagged a finger at the other?
Hey, this is not a one-way street.
I just want to make sure.
Not a one-way street. Anyway, but seriously, I mean, can't we avoid, can't we keep our political differences, even deeply felt ones, from becoming violent? I mean, can't we keep ourselves from picking up guns? And look, I own a gun. I'm a Second Amendment guy, to maybe not to the degree that McKay is, but honestly, I think that to some extent, what we ought to be talking about is the prevalence of guns being available. And when you have so many guns available, I don't care how good your training and how good your gun control is, you're going to have some crazy people who are incensed pick them up and use them in this way. And that troubles me. I don't know what the answer is.
My husband always says guns are designed for one reason, to kill.
Yeah.
And don't ever forget that.
That's
you
true.
Know? Dan?
You know, it was interesting when, you know, and I my heart goes out to the families obviously involved in this, because even if they weren't, you know, even if it wasn't a family member that was shot, but somebody's at the event and, you know, and someone gets shot at the event that their family member's at, it still scares everybody until news and there's contact, right? So a lot of people are impacted by this kind of fear. This individual was, like many people, obviously had something wrong. And decided that the only solution was for someone to be shot, right? Which is generally the genesis of all of these problems related to related to firearms. This, though, and not to make light of this issue, but it does highlight how broken this conversation is about gun control or whatever. You cannot have an incident in America without the Democrats immediately jumping to, there's too many guns. The guns are the problem. The guns. And it's like, my goodness, folks, this is obviously a mental health issue. There are people who know this person and may have known that there was a propensity that stayed silent for this type of issue to occur. And what I would say, honestly, let's prevent things long before. There are people involved who can be looking out and be watching for these kind of behaviors and can be saying, you know what? We as a people can watch out for each other and help prevent that kind of violence better than any fences or any guard barriers or any gun control or anything else for that matter will do. And yeah, Natalie, I understand, you know, your husband, I understand his sentiment, but there are legitimate reasons why, if someone's coming into your house or you want to protect yourself or you're hunting for food, all those kinds of things for having a firearm are the reasons I own them and why I will hopefully continue to, unless Brian King gets his way.
Yeah, right. Listen, it doesn't have to be one or the other. I mean, we can have reasonable gun control measures in place that are calculated to reducing violence and reducing death and injury while at the same time preserving people's Second Amendment rights. The Second Amendment isn't absolute, and the Supreme Court in the Heller case said that very thing. You and I as state legislators have plenty of room to enact laws that deal with gun safety and controlling guns. And I agree entirely with you, Dan, that mental health ought to be a higher priority. We ought to have greater resources for it. But I don't know about this guy. He may have had absolutely nothing in his history to suggest that he was going to go out and do this with guns.
Guys, there's a broad stroke here that I just want to, you know, kind of put some words to. We have, we're approximately 1 year out from the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. Last week, we had a mother and some children that were, you know, gunned down by a guy that was, you know, clearly deranged and not of one mind, right? This is the tragic Sandy shooting. Yeah. There's just violence everywhere around us. Now, I had the good pleasure of meeting our new U.S. District Attorney who was just nominated in the last week, John Huber. Do you know John?
I don't know
John. John is an impressive guy. This is a guy that was appointed by Obama, then was asked to resign, as Trump did all these district attorneys, and then he was put in as interim by Jeff Sessions, and now Trump has nominated him. So he's survived the transition. Yeah. But he's a MAGNA native, and he's the top federal law enforcement official in our state, and he is going after violent crime in this state. And he told me this week that violent crime in Utah in the last year grew 13%. very significant increase. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of it domestic abuse stuff. So, you know, mental health, gun control, but somehow we've got, we're in a real state of uneasiness, and it's not.
And going to, resorting to corners where it's either this or that, and I think Dan would agree with me on this. This is a multifaceted approach that we need. There are a lot of things that we need to do. Some of it has to do, I think, with mental health care and identifying individuals who shouldn't, you know, be in a position where we can allow this kind of stuff to happen, or at least we want to try and decrease it. But some of it, I think, does have to do with guns and the prevalence of guns in our society.
Dan, you're a policy wonk. You're also someone who would make a good attorney general in this state, so just putting you on the spotlight there or whatever. But something has to happen. I mean, we're having all these summits for economic development and tourism and all these things. What are we doing about violent crime in this state?
Yeah.
I'm talking about gangs. I'm talking about domestic abuse.
I think you've seen a legislative shift from talking about, you know, focusing on incarceration and focusing on, you know, prison terms and mandatory minimums and those kinds of things to treating the individual. And I think as you've seen that change legislatively in the state, I think that that itself is the beginning of changing the conversation.
So would you predict that this new prison relocation and more focus on public safety in this state will lead us to some needed reforms?
I believe the reforms, and at least the groundwork for those reforms, are taking place and have been taking place for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's going to take us time to make changes that will be substantive in a way that we really make a progress on some of these violent issues.
As a Capitol Hill watcher, I would just say that it seems to me like so much energy continues to be on, you know, economic development and education and infrastructure investment. I'm not saying, because obviously we've made the decision about the prison, but when I've looked at the data and in talking to John Huber, I'm recognizing that it feels like we're losing some ground.
Well,
against the bad guys.
Yeah, I think that there are some things. I wish that one of the things that people don't recognize, I think, is that if we had passed Medicaid expansion, we would have had a lot of money available to provide the kind of treatment for mental health services for individuals leaving prison and jail that we didn't have as a result of not doing anything. Now, as it turns out, of course, with the Trump presidency, that may not be in place at all. But but you know, we don't allocate resources to this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Dan, any comments since Medicaid expansion
that's
was
so
brought
true.
Up?
I think, and I would love to see, you know, candidly, I am somewhat critical of our attorney general and would like to see more in this respect, at least more of his involvement in some of those things. But I have seen from a lot of from his office, I have seen real push on violent crime and some of those things that have been steps in a positive direction. Honestly, though, I think, and this is me on my campaign stump speech for just a moment, I think that a lot of these problems are further and further indications of the more we depend on government and look to, quote, government to solve our problems, the less we're looking to ourselves and less we're looking to our neighbor, to work with our neighbor and those kinds of things. I see there are times when I see the Californication of Utah. You know, it's kind of an interesting old Red Hot Chili Peppers song. But it's interesting because, you know, in California, you can, at least it was true in my neighborhood, you could live next to somebody and never talk to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your focuses were on other things. And I see some of the push for that
happening here
in Utah.
Yeah.
And it then becomes interesting that lack of community or that lack of neighborhood then leads to increased, you know, or lack of support internally and therefore increased crime.
It's neither, it's not really relevant, but since you brought up the term Californication, the first time I learned about that, I heard about that, dealt with Utah ski industry. Mm-hmm. So many California skiers coming to our slopes, but it's interesting as Utahns, we use it in a lot of different ways,
and this is a
good example. A little transition here, but Brian, we have in the Democratic Party a real problem right now trying to get a new chair elected. We had Rob Miller, did he step down out of
contention? Yeah, well, he was in the
contention.
Race, and then he stepped out
stepped
of the
down.
Race.
And I only bring it up in this context because, you know, you bring up Medicaid expansion and some things that obviously Democrats want to see happen in this state, but if they don't get organized as a party and unify, good luck. because there are already too few Democrats to make a lively discussion, a lively enough discussion.
Right, right.
Fair enough?
No, I think that's
since
true.
There's two Republicans in the room.
When you're in a super minority status, you don't have the ability to influence the direction of the conversation to the same degree as when you're even in minority status, much less majority.
So why can't the Democratic Party say, you got Trump in the White House, he's uber controversial in this state. I mean, he is.
He sure is.
And then you have some open seats. Why can't the Democratic Party come together and unify behind a leader that, is speaking to a broad base and getting the Democratic Party a chance to win some of these elections?
Well, I think you'll see that. I don't know who's going to be elected as the chair on Saturday, but that decision will be made this coming Saturday at the state party convention. So, you know, there are about four or five women running and four or five men. There are some individuals that I think have good potential, but none of them have a lot of experience politically in the state or are high-profile names.
Yeah. Are any of them former pilots? Because that's proven to be a good recipe on the Republican side.
I don't think any of them
I guess
were
he's not a former.
Pilot.
He's a current pilot.
Current pilot.
Current pilot.
Yeah, that's right. But you know, look, with all due respect, it's not, I think, the party chairs. And I met Rob Anderson today. We did a little thing up at Weber State. But it's not the party chairs who are the primary voices for the parties in the state, I don't think. I don't think we've seen that with James Evans. I think we've seen other people who are the primary voices. And I think that's true on the Democratic side and will be true in the future.
So you've got parties important. That aren't as relevant as maybe they were at one point.
Probably. And I think what you've got is, I mean, that's one component of a lot of things that come together to make up the Democratic voice in Utah. And, you know, we'll have our elected officials make up the voice and we'll, to some extent, have new people come forward that are voices within the Democratic Party as we see continued dysfunction in Washington, D.C., and particularly from Donald Trump.
See, I thought you were going to say dysfunction within the Democratic Party.
See, no, the dysfunction in D.C. is going to galvanize and energize the Democratic Party. Locally.
Lovely. So the one thing I thought was really interesting, though, is it just highlighted the fact that, you know, the Rob Miller issue just highlighted the fact that we Republicans have not got the monopoly on crazy.
Well, that's true.
Or discord, disunity,
disorder,
whatever.
Disunity, all these other stuff. And so for a little while, there was like this weird Democratic infighting, and it just felt like I felt like I could go maybe to the Democratic convention and feel at home.
Yeah,
and
that's
it was
right.
just because there was so much discord between the
Dan,
groups.
Before we go to gripes, and you're welcome to comment on this too, Brian, but it's just not as relevant on the Democratic side. But so we have John Curtis gets his 15,000 signatures for Chaffetz's seat. Chaffetz is going to step down at the end of June. Any more drama to talk about in this third congressional district?
Well, you've heard and read that those who get nixed from convention this coming Saturday, there are some that are considering litigating then with the governor because, again, they've been nixed from the nominating process before there's even a vacancy, which has been my legal claim this entire time, is that the governor is calling an election and starting an election process before a vacancy has occurred. So if Jason Chaffetz between now and June 30th changes his mind, all of this will be for naught.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's actually a very good point. And this is one of the reasons that the governor, in my humble opinion, I agree with every one of my Republican colleagues, the Speaker and the President, the governor should have left the legislature to be the ones to set up the framework for this thing.
And so this is going to be some interesting drama post-convention to see what happens with this whole mess.
And we'll be talking about it here on both sides of the aisle.
I'm sure.
Well, it's time for gripes. We have Representative Brian Keene, Representative Dan McKay. Guys, you ready to gripe?
I'm ready.
All right, let's hear it, Brian.
Here's my gripe. My gripe is people saying stuff online, social media, Facebook, Twitter, and not just online, but on radio and television programs, in a way that they feel is insulated from the rules of normal civil discourse. They write things that they would never say or write if they had the person that they were talking about in front of them. That is obnoxious, cowardly, and it is corrosive to the political discourse in our society. And I think it plays a role in what we saw just this week back in Virginia. Yeah. I think that that's the kind of thing that causes people to get so angry, they get insulated, they get in their bubble, and they go out and pick up
guns. You think this guy was hyped up by all the negative Democrats?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Natalie, my gripe is the level of discourse in debates. I actually watched, not a really a debate. It was like a candidate meet and greet forum for the Congressional District 3 candidates. And it was basically, what do you think? Great. First person, next person, I agree. Third person, I agree. Fourth person, I agree. It was like having 12 me's on the stage,
yeah,
and all of them agreed with each other. Honestly, that's not a bad picture. But that being said, it was really quite quite sad. I mean,
yeah,
I wish there was,
yeah,
some diversity of ideas or somebody really kind of driving things,
yeah,
forward.
Yeah, you want to see
But
it.
I think maybe you have infected my brain with that, so maybe that's my
Could
gripe.
Be.
They're all on the crazy.
Hey, I'm going to pull Jim DeBacchus here and do a kudo instead of a gripe. But if our listeners haven't, if you guys haven't listened to the 911 call of the woman who was tragically killed in the Sandy shooting with her children, you know, she calls in the night, two nights before, at 2:30 in the morning, complaining about how she felt, unsafe and whatnot with her children. And that 911 professional handled it so well. Listen to the tape. You'll be impressed in the people in public service. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program's produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.